Blog Talk Radio.
Masons have tended to do for quite a long time, and being men of conscience and imagination and a purpose. Today is the 11th of November, 2018. Along with our celebrations of life, our striving to understand, it's also a moment for somber reflection. It's an anniversary of sorts. 100 years ago, an armistice was signed, ending the fighting in the First World War. Can you imagine? It's hard to. Important to remember, hard to imagine, hard to understand in some ways just how completely destructive that war had been. Cities destroyed, villages just obliterated. The madness just ruined the, it was a madness that gripped humanity, wasn't it? Ruined the economy, didn't matter. The environment didn't matter. Russia underwent a revolution, a transformation. Germany became a republic. And the whole Austro-Hungarian Empire was dismantled. Even in the Middle East was reconstructed, restructured. And most of Europe, just out of necessity. And those decisions, as we know from Fred Margaret Macmillan's work in 1919 led the way to the, paved the path to the Second World War. So important to be mindful. Those were, we were men, there were boys once, there were girls once. Oh, the history may have been written in a time where men were writing history for men and about men, but let's make no mistake, this affected every human being. Every human being. Sons and daughters, and the uncertainty. But come together, they were brave. As we know, they died facing the enemy, didn't they? Facing forward, their duty. And they did it well. As horrible as it was, with so much potential, but people of all countries suffered. People of all suffered. Just think. Does it matter if it was more than one? 65 million soldiers were mobilized by the Allied and Central Powers. 1914, 65 million. by 1918, 8.5 million of them had been killed, and a staggering 21 million had been injured. 7.75 million had been taken prisoner. That's 37 million. So nearly 60% of all that force. Didn't matter, civilian or enlisted. It was a rough estimate, 13 million civilians. They were starved or died of exposure or disease or were massacred. How do we make sense of it? We try to make sure those people today, don't come back alone or isolated. They're still part of us. They're still part of our world. Their memories linger. My goodness, their memories linger in ours. It's not sophomoric to wave a flag, I think. But everybody waves a flag. Can you imagine? Far too. So, I'm not one to make public moments of overwhelming sadness. That's for your heart. And for all the soldiers out there, I say thank you for all the military support out there. Thank you. Oh, it wasn't just about bullets and weapons. It never is. All the supplies to keep those troops equipped at the front. And people have to eat. If you starve your troops, they lose all those farmers and transportation specialists, expediters, all the people that were enlisted. Everybody was expected and needed to do their part. If we're aware of the potential for madness that cascade into madness, then when we see or feel it happening, as awkward as it might be, think about what happens when we don't move forward. When people of conscience wait that moment too long, not to be rash, but to be cautious. Be cautious. So on this day of remembrance, can we offer a collective thank you? Give them what they gave to us. Give them a moment of time. They've become timeless, haven't they?
Tu sais, je vais t'aimer, même sans ta présence. Je vais t'aimer, même sans espérance. Je vais t'aimer tous les jours de ma vie. Tous les jours de ma vie. paix, je veux pleurer. Quand tu t'éloigneras, je fais pleurer. Mais tu me reviendras et j'oublierai la douleur de mes nuits. Tu sais, je souffrirai à chaque instant de temps. Je souffrirai, mais quand tu seras là, je renaîtrai tous les jours de ma vie.
Time goes on. So does purpose. So does agency. Welcome to Masonic Effects, to one and all. Where I am, I look out the windows and it's snowing. That soothes my mind. It settles my mind. I'm the kind of person that can't walk past this kind of day, these kind of memories too easily, because I think somehow it's not right to do that. And yet, if I dwell on it, it's just a downward spiral, you know. I don't do that. I'm a little too old and been through, seen too much. I don't do that. But I found there are other ways of at least acknowledging the spirit. The spirit of what was going on. The spirit of each of those people who gave their lives. Only I need to honor them as best I know how. Not much for a collective agony, no. For me, it's personal. Probably is for a lot of you. So I need to draw a line and say the storm is, that storm is over. Yeah, it could happen again, but we have moved on. We have truly moved on. In our minds, we need to remember, just to be cautious. Why remember? Just to be cautious, because we may think that in our experience, we've got all the risks and dangers covered. We've built the barrier just high enough for the next storm surge, never thinking that one could come, that is like the storms out of time. Out of time when it would overwhelm our little barriers and leave us thinking, gee, we should have known. Yeah, we had lots of time and we had the resources. If only we had known. Huh? We could have built it a little higher, a little better. We could have been more diplomatic. We could have had our diplomats there instead of the radical voices. Let's get the diplomats there to ensure we exercise all of the options and help that storm surge to dissipate well offshores. And we can saber rattle and do whatever we have to for those egos, but we can also collectively make sure that those egos know who's in charge. It's not the chaos and madness. I'm going to talk to you today about but that is a bit of a theme. Yeah. We're going to tuck into some work by William Shakespeare today. There's chaos out there. Listeners tuning into Masonic Effects are in nations where that chaos is quite profound. There also may be listeners out there where being a Freemason is puts them at risk. I hope you are safe. I hope you're safe. Keep your head down. We'll protect your secrets. Until that day when you can be acknowledged for the person of value and worth that you are. But let me talk to you a little bit about William Shakespeare. We'll remember, but we'll move on a little slowly at the start, and then we'll gather inertia. Shakespeare, eh? Interesting guy. Interesting man. He was, I think he was born, we're not quite sure. He's baptized, probably, let's guess, within his first year or so, on the 26th of April, 1564. Well, he wasn't very old when he died, but, you know, in the 16th century, such is life. Eh? Died on the 23rd of April, 1616, 52 years old. And we know him as an English poet and playwright. An actor. We also know him as the husband of Anne Hathaway, and his children, Susanna and Hamnet and Judith. We know him as dad, daddy, father. Interesting guy. He's often called England's national poet. Now, why would I bring that forward? Because of the influence. Because of the influence. Undeniably, there's an influence of a British culture. We study it, and we want to study it. And cultured minds want to study what was produced, just as we want to examine the ancient cultures that gave us such great things. The astronomy and mathematics and sciences of the Middle East, profound thinkers. Sophia Hagia, Constantinople, just remarkable for leadership.
And Egypt
before that, and before the Egyptians, the Chinese. And then, Shakespeare talks to us about the rape of Lucretia that is said to have led to the formation of the Roman Republic, as the monarchy was expelled after that. He was, in a way, a historian, this Shakespeare. Do we leave and neglect or ignore the work of Ovid? Well, perhaps. Or does Virgil mean anything to us anymore? Well, okay. Perhaps, doesn't matter. Or Horace, the work. But people that are curious will want to know why. Why have the works of these people resonated through civilizations? We're looking at, a time BC, thousands of years. Why? Well, that's not for me to answer. That's for you to discover for yourself if you're curious enough and diligent enough. Go slowly. It's not that in the first reading, history always makes sense. Sometimes the questions we put to history need to be asked over and over and over before the answer in its fruition becomes clear to us. Why do we want more? Why do we need or want permanence or stability around us? Isn't temporary good enough? Should a song or a melody linger and have an effect on people for thousands, for hundreds of years, thousands of years? Or is it enough today if I listen to the tune of the moment and it's gone in the next moment? As we become a little deeper in our thinking and gain a bit more of a sense of control of our thoughts and wonder about purpose and start to understand and look at the context of our lives, as Masons especially, we begin to notice things. We begin to notice what's valuable and useful and what's temporary, what's illusory. So we put William Shakespeare up there, not because of the person, but because of the work and the intimacy of the work that he left for us. The intimacy that's inescapable to this day when you're left in the theater, in a darkened theater, listening to the well-acted words coming from the stage. It's in our minds to savor that. We're in a room full of people doing the same thing. But for us, it's an intimate enclosure. How do those words affect us? What are they saying about the interaction of the characters on the stage? Well, Shakespeare took us deeper into ourselves than perhaps we were familiar with at the time. Oh, there's curiosity, and some of it's salacious, usual stuff. Curiosity about the fellow. But if we want to know him, can we also know him by his work? He was a poet. He wrote plays, of course, but he was a poet too. So the one that I've chosen isn't it? He has some famous bits of work. This is done, and this he wrote in 1593, Venus and Adonis. And this is a based on a passage from Ovid's Metamorphoses. That's Ovid's perhaps most famous piece. And this is about Venus and Adonis, the young Adonis, and he's getting ready to go hunting when Venus takes hold of him and makes it as though she wants to seduce him. And she tries to persuade him to love her. But he doesn't want to. He says, I'm too young. He's too young, and all he wants to do is go and hunt. But she is Venus, after all, and she finally succeeds in getting him to kiss her. And then he leaves her. And then soon after, Adonis is killed in a hunting accident. Even as the sun with purple-colored face has taken his last leave of the weeping morn, rose-cheeked Adonis hied him to the chase. Hunting he loved, but love he laughed to scorn. Sick-thoughted Venus makes a mane unto him, and like a bold-faced suitor, begins to woo him. Thrice fairer than myself, thus she began, the field's chief flower, sweet above compare, stained to all nymphs, more lovely than a man, more white and red than doves or roses are. Nature that made thee herself at strife, saith that the world hath ending with thy life. Vouchsafe thy wonder to alight thy steed and rein his proud head to the saddle bow. If thou wilt deign this favor for thy need, a thousand honey secrets shall thou know. Here, come, sit, where never serpent hisses, and being set, I'll smother thee with kisses, and not yet cloy thy lips with loathed satiety, but rather famish them amid their plenty, making them red and pale with fresh variety. 10 kisses short as one long as 20. A summer's day will seem an hour, but short, being wasted in such time beguiling sport. With this, she see this on his sweating palm, the precedent of pith and livelihood, and trembling in her passion, calls it balm, and earth's sovereign salve to do a goddess good. So, being enraged, desire doth lend her force courageously to pluck him from his horse. Over one arm the lusty courser rein, and under her other was the tender boy, who blushed and pouted in a full disdain, with leaden appetite apt to toy. She red and hot as coals of glowing fire, he red with shame but frosty in desire. The studded bridle on a ragged bough nimbly she fastens. Oh, how quick is love! The steed is stalled up, and even now to tide the rider she begins to prove. Backwards she pushed him, and she would be the thrust and govern him in strength, though not in lust. So soon was she along that he was down, each leaning on their elbows and their hips. Now doth she stroke his cheek, now doth he frown and guides to chime, but soon she stops his lips and kissing speaks with lustful language broken, for thou wilt chide, thy lips shall never open. The rest you need to look at for yourself. I'm not even close to the end of this. Get the idea? Think of the man that wrote it. What was he getting at? A bit intimate, you think? Here's the last stanza. Thus weary of the world, away she hies and yokes her silver doves, by whose swift aid their mistress mounted through the empty skies in her light chariot quickly is conveyed, holding their course to Phaphos, where their queen means to immure herself and not be seen. Here was thy father's bed, here in my breast. Thou art the next of blood, and 'tis thy right. Lo, in this hollow cradle, take thy rest. My throbbing heart shall rock thee day and night. There shall not be 1 minute in an hour where I will not kiss my sweet love's flower. Venus and Adonis. Worth a look. Why, oh why, Shakespeare, after all these years, why does it resonate? It's a bit like masonry in a way, do you not think? It's an acquired taste. It takes time to understand. It can't be forced, like learning. Can't force learning. Oh, no, that's true, you can't. True learning and inspiration, imagination, that comes from what the student gives us. How's that, Belgium? How's that? How's that? Holly Gibbons. It's a tune. After Hours. I'd say it works. It's from some music that she created in 2015. Commentary today is interesting, I think. Because, you know, sometimes I pay attention to you and I listen. Sometimes I listen to what's there, and other times it sort of notice what's not there, you know? It's missing. We plan and we design, and then we adjust because, you know, our foresight is always a limited. We have an understanding of probability. And I can't imagine how dull it would be if we had that uniformity that Thomas More was talking about in Utopia. I cannot imagine that. Can you imagine? People in lines and marching and of one mind. I cannot imagine how staggering that would be. Oh, in small areas, it has applications. You're in a surgical team, you want everybody on the same page, don't you? Yes, yes. When you need to depend on your fellows around you, you need everybody on the same page. But ultimately, it comes down to how you steer the ship. Here, the commentary today is on dreaming Masonic dreams. Oh, the image of Masonry has faded with time. Unfairly, but not unjustly. Our legacy has been a burden as well as a unique history. Tempering audacious and impressionists alike. What if it were different? Instead of plodding along as an ersatz social service club, Masonry expressed its true nature. What if lodges sponsored public events solely to promote the arts? If we are held back by assumptions about our cohort, this is mystifying. What if we were thoughtful about restoring meritocracy? For example, I'll speak about Canada, of course, not to be presumptuous, but in Canada, where I live, we have a parliamentary poet laureate. What if lodges sponsored a night with our current laureate, Georgette Leblanc? What if we decided it was time to establish a social currency and confront notions of misogyny? One of our most powerful truths that brings hypocrisy to the surface is domestic violence. Quiet commitment to women's shelters through regular donations would increase awareness and define Masonry without a word and be a boost for the children and women who are being hurt. What if lodges sponsored competitions for literature, for juried art shows? What if we sponsored homes for the care of elderly Masons and their spouses? You get the picture? We have become a pastiche of what we aspire to be. If we express notions of universality, how do we demonstrate that commitment? Ideals are inaccessible until we begin to see them as encouragement to try things never attempted before. They are the root of inspiration, as varied in the minds of people searching for inspiration. Consider for a moment why beauty is the last and the one pillar of three. Each has a part to play. Dreaming and being open-minded is not a weakness. especially not where there is a love of the arts and sciences. That is respect. Now we show it.
Yeah.
Oh, that too? Set the mood. Huh? Interesting that Shakespeare creates word pictures. So did the ancient writers, the ancient playwrights, created pictures. The similarity to masonry, you're wondering that, of course. Where does it overlap and connect? Fundamentally, Freemasonry is an idea. How well we perform that idea, how well we imagine that idea in our own minds, establishes the experience for people coming to witness, coming curious about the effects, about the quality of the experience that has such endurance and is hailed with such important properties. Ethics. And does it in a way where the suspicions about the motives behind this are very, very vaporous. Oh, there's always, this is not an imposition on anybody's thinking. No. But it's really awkward and hard for us to think that there is some body of knowledge out there, some organization around it, whose sole purpose is the betterment of all of us and the betterment of the participants. That's very hard to, let's agree, that's very hard to accept. And either we need to be able to surrender our disbelief and embrace that, the ideology, embrace it and understand it for what it is. Is it that, Joseph Campbell was talking to us about follow your bliss. Is this the step to bliss? And you do that not by combat. You do that by understanding, at least according to Campbell, and his work is worth a listen. The connections. We are an idea. Now, the idea is more complete than us. And the more we understand about the idea of masonry, it's like the idea of jazz or the idea of classical music or the idea of country music. When you're sitting around listening to somebody strum a guitar and sing, I'm a huge fan of cowboy poetry. I just think it's amazing. But when you're sitting around at night under the stars and somebody's quoting cowboy poetry and somebody else is picking up a guitar, it's magical. So it's because it's an idea and we commit to those ideas. That's what makes it special. And when we're doing less than our best, we haven't committed. Oh, like Michelangelo would say, if you're everybody's talking to me about how talented I am, but if they only knew how much effort and study and work I put in. He was a good entered apprentice, wasn't he? He was a good apprentice. He worked that moment harder. He wanted this more than the next. He wanted that beauty. He couldn't satisfy. He couldn't settle. Now, you and I, how often do we settle? Oh, wait, I don't want you to answer that. That's for you to decide. That's a secret. That's in your heart. How often do you settle knowing that you're capable of more? Oh, be generous with yourself. We're also, we need to be charitable with each other and to ourselves. We admit these things not as criticisms, but as acknowledgments. If you want to know, think about it. You want to know that we have these hundreds of years of glorious history. Terribly, it's lost. It's just so much mystery, isn't it? And conjecture and conflict. Oh, people were saying such terrible things about us, you know. And then when they were found out, well, you know, those books didn't just come off the shelves and were destroyed. Those ideas have continued. Oh, even to this day. Paxil, you know, you idiot, you were trying to make a buck, but look what you did. Eh? Did you have any idea? No, of course you didn't. You know, you could make a buck selling work, criticizing us. Well, of course they did. Look at Anderson with his history. Just, you know, he's making a buck. Okay, no fault you for that. But listen, Dopey, you left sort of a legacy behind, didn't you? And it's not you that's living with it, it's us. Like, what were you thinking, man? Well, it was in the day, and he needed some income, and he had been fired. He was not doing his job as a clergyman. Okay, so hard times. Mouths to feed, you do what you have to. Got it. But we're rolling down this pathway of authenticity. So the closer we've come in our hearts and in our minds to doing it right, that doesn't mean everybody else in the orchestra is on the same page. That to sit in this orchestra is the choice is not in the hands of each performer. It's in the hands of the conductor, of the person performing the piece, where I have my part to play in this symphony. In this band, if you want. And if I'm off key or out of time, then all the attention goes to that. And what happens to the performance? Oh, well, let's wait while the person walks back to his seat, prances back to his seat and sits down. Let's take the focus off the work and the point. And let it meander all over the place. Whoa. And you wonder. So you see the difference, don't you? When it's done well, it's flawless. It's unnoticeable exchange of actors in the scene, coming and going. When that happens, then the people in the audience can sit back and they can actually hear. They can absorb it. It permeates the intimacy of their thoughts. Since thou art dead, lo, here I prophesy. Sorrow on love hereafter shall attend. I shall be waited on with jealousy. No hesitation, no asking for a line. That's distracting. Let me experience these ideas and let them pour over me in the audience and over the person that's the center of this experience without interruption. Is it asking enough? Well, let's hope that if we're looking for answers to the condition of masonry today, that we realize that they're at our fingertips. And are we looking to make it driven? No. This is more that spontaneity. Freemasonry, I feel, is much more like jazz, where everybody is capable. Well, where everybody riffs off the work of everybody else. Like Miles Davis. There was no wrong note playing with Miles Davis. He could pick up whatever you left him and make it beautiful. So each one of you is Miles. Each one of you. Here. Shakespeare pours over these ideas and puts them in such a delicate language that for the discerning ear and the discerning mind, it's there to discover. And he's taking us, not only that, he's taking us into places we may not have been before, but he knows that he knows that this is something that's in the minds of the, this is the capacity of the people in the audience. I shall suspect where is no cause of fear. I'll be doubtful, there's no cause, but I'll make it up, you know. I shall not fear where it most must, it should mistrust. I make mistakes. Huh? He knew that about us. Here. The idea that we work with is that every bit is beautiful. Every bit is beautiful. But it's articulated in a different way for a different purpose. Here, I'll give you an example and show you what I mean. This is about the summary of Masonic symbolism of the ladder. Do you remember we were talking about that before? I always found the ladder an annoying kind of a symbol, you know, because it sort of rattled my chain a bit to think that our priorities are in a hierarchy. I don't know. I have a sense of balance. All these priorities are important, but and it's not a stable balance, but it comes and goes. It's more like a wave, you know? And we ride on that, and out of that valence, we find balance and purpose, yeah? And order. Thus, the dark clouds of divine wrath are dissipated. The heavens are opened, and we enjoy a ray of his glory in the celestial covering of the lodge. And more than this, the same divine being has taught us how to attain the summit of the same by means which are emblematically depicted by a ladder, consisting of three principal rounds or staves, which point to the three theological virtues, faith, hope, and charity. We are now to consider the origin and application of this symbol by which a communication is opened between the Creator and his creature, with the gracious design of restoring a man that supreme happiness which was forfeited by Adam's transgression. Oh, this is old school. The application of this emblem is said to be derived from the vision of Jacob. When the patriarch, to avoid the wrath of his brother Esau, fled from Panorama, denied and asleep with the earth for his bed, a stone for his pillow, and the cloudy canopy of heaven for his covering, he beheld a ladder, whose foot was placed on the spot where he lay, and its summit lost in the subtle ether. On this ladder, angels continually ascended and descended to receive communications from the Most High, who visibly appeared above the uppermost round of the ladder and to disseminate their divine commissions over the face of the earth. And here, God graciously condescended to enter into a specific covenant with the sleeping patriarch, who was hence so impressed with the feelings of gratitude and devotion that when he awoke, he pronounced this consecrated spot the house of God and the gate of heaven. In ancient masonry, the ladder was figuratively said to rest on the Holy Bible and to consist of three principal staves, although the general figure number was indefinite, pointing to earth, faith, hope, and charity as the fundamental virtues which exalt mankind from earth to heaven. You have here a most extraordinary coincidence of custom with respect to the Masonic ladder, existing in every region of the world and all equally applicable to a gradual ascent to heaven by the practice of moral virtue. Amongst us, this practice is founded on the strong basis of faith, which is the first step of the ladder, resting on the word God. It produces a well-grounded hope of sharing the promises recorded in the sacred volume, and this is the second step of the Masonic ladder. The third or more perfect step is charity, by which we attain the summit of the ladder. Metaphorically speaking, the dominion of bliss and the mansion of pure and permanent delight. The use of Jacob's ladder in this way, Masonic symbolism, seems to have been a product of the later years of the 18th century. For there's no mention in Pritchard's exposure in 1730, nor in any of the early catechisms. The trestle boards at the end of the century have the device, and the lectures have reference to faith, hope, and charity. In the earliest trestle board designs, the virtues were depicted on staves of the ladder by their initials, F, H, and C. Symbols depicting the virtues are first found on early craft certificates, the forerunners of the present Grand Lodge certificate, and first issued in the second half of the 18th century on paper. An English craft certificate by T. O. Halsch is in Ars Quattro Coronatorum, Volume 82, and several illustrations to represent the three theological virtues may be seen. And on the certificate given to William Preston by the Lodge of Antiquity, number 1, there are three architectural pillars, each with a virtue represented on top. That for faith is a female figure bearing a cross. Hope, another female figure with an anchor and charity. And third, female figure caring for children and relieving the poor and lame. There was no relationship with the latter at the time, nor was there a similar theme taken by the moderns Grand Lodge in the design of their Book of Constitutions of 1784. Use of the latter came later, along with other symbols for the virtues along the Christian religious connection, although it is made plain. In this matter, again, such symbolism was common experience at the time, particularly in an artistic or architectural context, and there's nothing special in its use in masonry. So what's this antiquarian telling us? That we're waiting for the next connective explanations to be written? It would seem. This was common at the time, and it was although the Christian religious connection made plain. Today, we have many. Christian is one of them. And we're reminded that we don't have a Bible. We're reminded that we take our oaths on the volume of the sacred law that you bring. It's amazing, isn't it? Well, that's it for today. That's enough, huh? I think. The banquet's over for a little while. No, there's no apology if this takes time or it slows things down for compared to what you're doing. If you're moving too fast, well, you're moving too fast. There's a price for that. If you're dwelling in the past and your thoughts, or you're worried about the future, those are dishonest moments. What we need here in Masonic Effects is those honest moments where you're here now. It's like when I give a talk and the old boys in the front row, as I open my dossier, as I open my file to speak, are looking at their watches repeatedly. Childish. Don't do that. You can go. It's been a pleasure to have you here, though. I hope you've liked what we've served up. I hope it's been useful to you, or interesting, or entertaining. I'll leave you with a little tune by a woman named Veronica Swift. It's called Darn That Dream. Yeah, okay, it's a little bit cheesy, isn't it? Dreaming Masonic dreams and dark, yeah. I look forward to, thank you, South Korea, and thank you, China, and thank you, listeners from France and Brazil. Big changes. Philippines, major things going on there. Russia, fascinating as always. And Britain and Scotland and England and Scotland and and Austria. I know you're attentive. Cameroon. Bit of an upheaval there.
Hmm? Yeah.
And Uganda. Going through growing pains, would you say? And over here in North America, well, no words need be said. Let's come together in this idea of catching our breath after great suffering and remembering even 100 years ago is not that long ago. Thanks for being here.
Dawn that day, I dream each night. You say you love me, and you hold me tight. But when I awake, you're out of sight.
Been a pleasure. Thanks for tuning in. Talk to you again soon.